morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, February the 14th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. A Ugandan writer says that he went into self-imposed exile to seek medical attention for injuries he sustained while being detained by state security operatives.
Right now, I have to first be fine. I have to first repair myself. I have to present myself to the hospital and they repair me and I get my good health like I was before. Then I return to Uganda and we continue the struggle.
In a bid to boost agrotourism, the government in Botswana is offering wildlife startup stock to farmers to keep in their plowing fields.
The species that the department would be availing in Impala, Hemsbok, Zebra, Eland and Warthog. The scheme that we're referring to relates to keeping of herbivores. It excludes carnivores.
And Tanzanian media has welcomed the government's decision to lift a ban on four newspapers that was imposed by the late President John Magufuli. We'll have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, a Ugandan writer says he went into self-imposed exile to seek medical attention following injuries he sustained while being detained by state security operatives. Kakwenza Rukirabasaija, who recently received bail after weeks of detention, says he was tortured and has scars all over his body as proof, a claim supporters of the government sharply deny. He was arrested on December the 28th and charged with offensive communication under the Computer Misuse Act. This for offensive language to criticize President Yoweri Museveni and Lieutenant General Muhoozi Kainerugaba, a commander of Uganda's land forces. Speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti, Mr. Rukirabasaija says that he plans to return to Uganda despite concerns that he could be in trouble for jumping bail and violating the country's immigration laws.
You have promised to return to Uganda after you seek medical attention abroad. How will you return to Uganda, knowing very well that some people are suggesting that you broke the rules of immigration and the country's territorial integrity by sneaking out of the country without proper documentation?
I will not be the first person to do that. My mentor, Dr. Kizza Besigye, in 2001 after elections, he ran out of the country, and in 2005, he returned. Yeah, I'll do that. Right now, I've already got an international passport that can enable me to move anywhere I want. And yeah, it will enable me to move to Entebbe. So I do not see any reason why I should not come back home and through Entebbe. Why should use porous borders to come back to Uganda? No, I will have to use Entebbe Airport to return. And I believe that Dictator Museveni will be waiting for me, and I will be ready for him too.
Again, on social media, President Museveni's son, Kainerugaba, Lieutenant General Kainerugaba Muhoozi, has denied ever knowing you, has denied being the person in charge or overseeing the allegations of torture meted out against you. What's your response to him?
Okay. Do you think that he can accept that he met me or he presided over my torture? Of course he cannot. But I can authoritatively tell you that throughout my detention, I met him twice. Then immediately after I was released on bail, they rearrested me. Or kidnapped me from prison, and they drove me to him, and I met him, and we talked, and he released me at night. He gave me a military escort, and they escorted me up to my gate at 3 a.m. They dropped me at my gate. So General Muhoozi, because he instructed me never to tell about my torture, never to write another book, never to show my scars. Now that I have become recalcitrant, he understands. Of course, he can never say that he did not meet me, you know? I mean, he can never say that he met me. He has to deny.
That was Ugandan writer Kakwenza Rukirabasaija. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti. In a bid to boost agrotourism, the government in Botswana is offering wildlife startup stock to farmers to keep in their ploughing fields. The government says the move will give locals an improved stake in the lucrative tourism sector. From Habarone, Mkodizi Dube has more.
Botswana's National Parks and Wildlife Director Kabelo Sinyatso says the government will run a pilot project between February and July this year where farmers will receive startup stock. Each farmer will get 5 animals per species, Sinyatso says.
The species that the department would be availing in impala, hemsbok, zebra, eland, and warthog. It's important, though, to clarify that we're not saying applicants should just restrict themselves just to these species, but people can keep whatever wildlife that they are keen to keep. It's also important to clarify that the scheme that we're referring to relates to keeping of herbivores. It excludes carnivores.
He says farmers must meet certain water, fencing and space requirements depending on the species they want to keep. Randy Mutsumi, a professional hunter, is keen to keep animals within his holding. However, he's concerned the cost will be prohibitive due to startup capital required.
This is a very good initiative. But the problem now is the expenses. It is going to be very, very expensive for an ordinary Mutswana. Just fencing only is going to cost an ordinary Mutswana over 1 million. So this initiative is good, but it needs a lot of funding.
According to requirements, gamekeepers must ensure there is adequate fodder and reliable water supply. The fence height should be between 1.5 and 2.4 meters, depending on the species kept. Conservationist Map Ives agrees that the venture requires a lot of resources.
Wildlife farming and the keeping of wildlife is a highly specialized business which requires huge capital outlay. If you are going to keep animals like eland, which are capable of jumping extreme heights, you are going to need infrastructure. You will also need reliable water infrastructure supplying fresh, potable water. And a lot of water in Western Botswana anyway is quite saline.
He adds the initiative might end up benefiting an elite few who have access to resources.
I understand the principle of spreading the ownership or the keeping of wildlife to the people. They're also trying to probably spread tourism away from the national parks and game reserves and wildlife management areas into other parts of Botswana. But again, I believe this is not well thought through and will probably only benefit elites. The elites who can afford to have large tracts of land, high quality infrastructure, and of course, people to look after that wildlife.
In announcing the initiative in 2020, President Mokgweetsi Masisi said it was one of the ways to revive a tourism sector hard hit by COVID-19. Botswana is one of Africa's leading tourism destinations, with the sector contributing 13% of the country's gross domestic product. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
And still in Southern Africa, Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has ruled out the use of U.S. dollars for salaries, which teachers on strike are demanding. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA News from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, where teachers and economists are condemning Mnangagwa for being out of touch with reality.
Addressing thousands members of the country's ruling ZANU-PF party Saturday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said Zimbabwe will continue to pay salaries in the local currency. He says, we know that there is no country that prospers without its own currency. We are on that path. We are supporting our own currency, which will help to grow our economy. We cannot grow our economy on the basis of a currency which we have no control upon. That's where we are going. he said. Zimbabwe's teachers have been striking since last week, asking for a minimum salary of $540 a month. They currently earn about $100 a month in local currency. Robson Chere of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe reacts to Mnangagwa's speech.
It is clear that Mr. Mnangagwa is as carefree and indifferent on the plight of teachers. And the demand for a living wage is a struggle that no one can stop at this moment. And no one can actually exclude teachers from being actively participating in our economy by paying them slave wages in the form of body. We will resist any attempts by any means necessary, even from the highest office, to stop us from demanding a living wage. And we are going to mobilize, we will continue mobilizing teachers and organize so that we will get the USD so that the teachers can also actively participate in this economy.
Raymond Majongwe is from the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
The president is not being honest and sincere. The tragedy of that analogy is that he is being very selective with the truth. Every service that they are providing, they are charging in US dollar. We have seen him buy chicken in, and he took US dollar bills from the pocket to pay. We didn't see him producing
The teacher's pay dispute goes back to October 2018 when the government stopped paying them in US dollars, switching to the reintroduced Zimbabwean dollar, also called the real-time gross settlement dollar. The new currency has steadily lost value, effectively reducing their wages. Prosper Chitambara, a senior researcher and economist at the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, says high inflation is the reason why teachers are not interested in the local currency.
Remember, when there is chronic high inflation, money cannot effectively serve as currency. The two major functions of currency are, number one, to serve as a medium of exchange, and number two, to serve as a store of value. So chronic high inflation actually affects the function of money, and it causes the market to lose confidence in the currency and to prefer to transact in a more stable currency, which in this case is the US. So once we address chronic high inflation, then people will begin to trust and to love and to have greater confidence in the local currency.
Last week, Zimbabwe's government offered teachers a 20% increase and other incentives, such as free school fees for their children and loans for housing. The teachers have rejected that offer as insufficient. The government later announced that the striking teachers have been suspended for 3 months without salary. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The French government says that its troops killed 40 militants on the Benin-Burkina Faso border in West Africa's Sahel region on Saturday. The action followed an attack on park rangers in northern Benin on Tuesday, in which a French national was among 8 people killed. Last week's attack was the deadliest in a string of attacks since December in northern Benin. These recent attacks have highlighted the expansion of Islamist violence from the landlocked Sahelian countries, where an insurgency has raged for much of the last decade, to West African coastal nations.
Voice of America!
And Tunisia's president cemented his grip over the judiciary on Sunday with a decree that lets him dismiss judges or block their promotion, a move that many see as a way for him to consolidate his power after he seized executive authority last summer. President Kais Saied outraged his opponents and alarmed Democratic foreign allies with his announcement last week that he was dissolving the Supreme Judicial Council, a body that guaranteed judicial independence in the country. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, and 40 other humanitarian organizations, including UN agencies, Save the Children Fund, and the governments of Djibouti, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Yemen, have launched an appeal for $67 million to provide life-saving assistance to nearly 500,000 African migrants. The appeal, known as the Regional Migrant Response Plan for the Horn of Africa and Yemen, was launched Thursday, February the 3rd, to respond to the dire humanitarian and security situation facing migrants on the eastern route between the Horn of Africa, Yemen, and the Gulf region. Yvonne Dege is IOM regional spokesperson for East and Horn of Africa, based in Nairobi, Kenya. She spoke to VOA's Robin Kayama about the appeal.
The appeal is designed to provide life-saving humanitarian and protection assistance to nearly 500,000 migrants and host communities on this eastern route. We're looking at around 494,000. Many of the migrants are stranded along this corridor trying to reach the Gulf, often without food or water. Many die of starvation, hunger, dehydration along the way. Some also are kidnapped. Some are detained, in particular in Yemen, where we know tens of thousands of African migrants are stranded or detained in facilities. The only way IOM, the International Organization for Migration, the UN Migration Agency, can address this issue is by working with the leaders, the governments, the authorities in the concerned nations, primarily Ethiopia, Somalia, Djibouti, Yemen, and of course the Gulf countries, which are the destination, but also sister UN agencies and other humanitarian and protection organizations.
What has been the impact of COVID-19 movement restrictions on migrants along the Eastern Corridor?
The impact of COVID-19 has been serious and severe for many, many, many migrants. Many migrants embarked on the journey on a destination unbeknown to them of the unfolding global pandemic crisis. Many became stranded and remain stranded. When you look at the fact that the measures to try to address or to halt the spread of the disease has forced national, global border closures and movement restrictions, IOM and its partners have found many, many migrants affected. They're also exposed to the conditions that are more likely to cause the spread of the pandemic, often living in cramped or overcrowded places and conditions, often sharing small spaces, not having access to personal protective equipment such as masks and sanitizers, and access to basic hygiene, being able to take a shower or wash one's hands. We know that there is a shortage and a lack of access to clean water when many of these migrants are undertaking these journeys, so may not have access to the vaccine. So the impact of the pandemic has been devastating. Migrants have faced xenophobia, discrimination, stigmatization, where migrants are blamed or where migrants are believed to be carriers of the virus because of the very nature of their lives.
That was Yvonne Dege, IOM regional spokesperson for East and Horn of Africa, speaking with VOA's Ruben Kayama from Nairobi. And Tanzanian media have welcomed the government's decision to lift a ban on 4 newspapers that was imposed by the late President John Magufuli. His successor, President Samia Hassan, promised to relax media restrictions. But the government slapped temporary bans on 2 other papers last year. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
The government issued new publishing licenses this week to newspapers Mwanahalisi, Mawio, Mseto, and Tanzania Daima. The latter is owned by opposition leader Freeman Mbowe, who is behind bars facing economic charges. Speaking during a meeting with editors Thursday, Minister of Information Nape Nnauye said the paper's licenses were restored on the orders of President Samia Hassan as part of her promise to uphold press freedom.
Kwa sababu mambo haya vizuri kuondoka kwenye maneno tutende, si ndio?
If the government means to have a fresh start with journalists, he said, it should express that commitment with actions and not mere words. Is that not right? I will hand over the licenses here myself, he added, so that we finish the rumors. However, Hassan's government has not hesitated to suspend other papers deemed to have run afoul of Tanzania's media law. Last year, the weekly paper Raia Mwema was suspended for 30 days for linking a gunman who killed four people to the ruling party CCM. The Huru newspaper was suspended for a week after publishing a story about the president saying she will not seek another term in 2025. Salome Kitomari of the Media Institute of Southern Africa in Tanzania, an organization that defends freedom of expression, welcomed the news that the four banned newspapers will again be allowed to publish. She also hopes to see the media law amended. Charles Kombe, for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
And it's now time for Daybreak Africa. With that, we go to Abuja with Samson O'Malley. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sports with a look at Africa's most prestigious club competition, the Confederation of African Football Champions League, which returned for the 58th edition this past weekend as the 2021-2022 season got underway with seven match day one fixtures. Four-time winners Esperance du Tunis of Tunisia recorded the biggest win of the day as they thrashed competition debutants Jaweng Galaxy of Botswana 4-0 at the Raids Olympic Stadium on Saturday. Algeria's ES Setif picked up the only away win on match day one as they saw Borea Athletic Club by lone goal at the General Lansana Conte Stadium in Guinea on Saturday. In Group B's other match, Raja Casablanca edged South Africa's AmaZulu courtesy of a Mushien Mutuali effort in the 67th minute to finish the game at 1-0. Egyptian side Zamalek played an entertaining 2-2 draw at home to Angola's Petro de Luanda, the Cairo International Stadium on Saturday, while South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns also got off to a fine start in Group A by defeating Al Hilal of Sudan 1-0 at the Royal Bafokeng Stadium, while Group C's North African derby between Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel and Algerian side CR Belouizdad ended in a goalless stalemate. Friday's action featured an impressive opening to Group D proceedings for Wydad Casablanca, who crushed Angola's Sagrada Esperanca 3-0. Defending champions Al Ahly, who are away for the Club World Cup, had their fixture against Al Merrikh postponed till Saturday, March the 5th. Match day two fixtures will be played on Friday the 18th and Saturday the 19th of February. Away from football now, Nigerian-born New Zealand mixed martial artist Israel Adesanya defeated Robert Whittaker by unanimous decision to retain his title and maintain control of the middleweight division at the UFC 271 on Sunday. Adesanya won his 11th straight middleweight fight in the UFC and remained undefeated. The judges scored it 48-47, 48-47, 49-46 in favor of Adesanya, who has won all four of his title defenses, three by unanimous decision and one by knockout.
We're just two guys trying to be the best in the world. But tonight I'm the best in the world. I wasn't really looking past Robert. I took him very seriously. And yeah, right all the way to the last bell, I knew he was dangerous. He caught me slipping one time and I was like, good one. But yeah, I look forward to fresh meat.
In basketball news, Nigeria will fly the flag for Africa at the FIBA Women's Basketball World Cup 2022 in Sydney after they scooped up the last available ticket on offer in Belgrade. Following on from the euphoria of their historic win against France, they repeated that feeling of joy but also mixed with a palpable sense of relief by completing a 73-69 victory against continental rivals Mali. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. Thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. And remember to connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.